When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hey guys, it's Nick. Before we get going today, I wanted to give you a few discount codes for the products we love and our show sponsors. So don't just turn this one off. If you're listening to this podcast, we at Hardwick Life want to reward you for your loyalty. So take 25% off of your order by using the code HardwickFF25, because after this long, we consider you friends and family. That's HardwickFF25 at Hardwick.life. It's like Hardwick.com, but that one was taken by a shirt company. So Hardwick.life is where you can find it. For 20% off at Bubs Naturals, .com. Use the code HARDWICK20. That's HARDWICK20 at BubsNaturals.com. And for 10% off at Julian Bakery, use the code Nick Hardwick. That's me at JulianBakery.com. Again, Nick Hardwick at JulianBakery.com. Now, if you want to hear what I take daily and get some insight as to what you should take, maybe stay tuned. If not, skip ahead about a minute and we will be into the show. Thank you all. All right. So you want to know what you should buy? I take 6 of our Hardwick Life products every day. I originally started that company out of kind of selfish needs. I wanted to get access to the absolute highest grade products in the world. Our supplements are pharmaceutical grade, all of them. They've got unique delivery mechanisms. So you aren't just getting expensive urine. You're actually absorbing the products at a higher rate than cheaper store-bought supplements. I take Brain, Joint, Fuel, Phyto, Pump, and Neuro. Now, that may be a little extreme for you, but those are my jams. Now, I've done a lot of damage to my body. I need all of them. The Brain and Joint, they're kind of self-explanatory, right? Fuel is one of the only whey protein powders that I can take that doesn't upset my tummy. And we hear the same thing quite frequently from folks that don't process dairy all that well. That's because it's made from New Zealand grass-fed whey. New Zealand has the highest dairy standards in the world. There's a noticeable difference, and the flavor, it's pretty damn incredible. For a peri-workout drink, which peri-workout, you'll hear that term, it means around your workout, or to add protein midday, I put 2 scoops of Fuel with Pump, which has 3 grams of creatine per serving, 400 milligrams of ATP, which is the body's energy currency, and 95 milligrams of caffeine to get you all fired up. All of those, they allow you to do more work in the gym, getting better results. More work equals better results. Who would have thought? Seriously, you can work harder and have a lower rate of perceived exertion. And I like to add in Phyto, which has all of the necessary nutrients, vitamins, and minerals, along with this patented formula called TrueBrock, which contains glucoraphanin, which researchers at MIT are calling the fountain of youth. And lastly, I take Neuro about an hour before bed. Dr. Andrew Huberman, a Stanford neuroscientist, host of the Huberman Lab podcast and recent guest with Joe Rogan. I'm sure some of you listen to that guy. He's pretty awesome. Recommended in our 3rd episode ever. We got him before he blew up. Magnesium L-threonate, as it's the only form of magnesium to cross the blood-brain barrier. And it increases levels of brain magnesium, and that leads to better cognition and a more robust memory. That's important. It also has a slight sedative effect to help you get to sleep. All right, I'm not going to bore you with more details. Get over Hardwick Life and use the code HARDWICKFF25 for 25% off. Now, you guys that have been following me for a while now know that I've used Bubs Naturals since the company's inception. I don't know. I may be their first ever ambassador. I know there's a lot of bigger names now that are promoting Bubs. The company has blown up and is thriving because many folks like me understand how great their product is. I take 2 scoops of their collagen protein and 1 scoop of the MCT oil powder daily with my morning coffee. Try it once. You're going to be hooked. It's unbelievably creamy. The collagen is also really a great way to sneak some protein into your kids' lives too. It's unflavored, so you can add it into pancakes, oatmeal, mac and cheese, or juice. And they're not going to notice a thing. Use the code HARDWICK20 for 20% off. Lastly, before we get to the show, I want to tell you about my friends at Julian Bakery. This company, they've really got their act together. I believe most people could use more protein in their lives. It's got a very positive effect on satiety, brain signaling, and maintaining a healthy body weight. I recommend 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight. Please don't listen to Zac Efron's trainer, who on their show falsely ties too much protein to kidney failure and loss of bone density. And certainly don't go to the Game Changers propaganda documentary on Netflix for your science. Neither of these use actual science. There's a lot of kooks out there, folks. We're going to keep fighting the good fight. I love a variety of protein. Obviously, I've told you about our whey protein, Bubs Collagen Protein. And Julian Bakery's specialty, in my opinion, is their egg white protein powder. They come in ridiculous flavors like pumpkin pie, coconut, maple glazed donut. They blend easily. They're a great addition in the middle of the day. Use the code Nick Hardwick for 10% off. That's Nick Hardwick for 10% off. All right, that's enough. Let's get you back to the show. Love y'all. All right, guys, let's do this. Got an awesome episode today. Former teammate of mine, 15-year NFL vet. Played in 219 games in his career. He's got over 1,000 career tackles. He's a one-time All-Pro, a two-time Pro Bowler. He's an author, having written the book Behind the Mask. He's a public speaker. He's an analyst. He's an executive producer and host of the Behind the Mask podcast. That's at the BTM podcast. He's a photographer. He's a world traveler. And as my former teammate, he's one of the best leaders of men that I've ever been around. He is Takeo Spikes. You can follow him on Instagram at T-A-K-E-O Spikes51. Let's do it.
Hey, brother.
Yo, Takeo, what's going on?
What's up, man? What's up, supermodel?
How are you, buddy? I got to zoom in so you can see my face.
Yeah, look at
what's
it.
What's up? God, I miss you. How long has it been?
Bro, it's been too long, bro. Way too long.
Gosh. Way too long. How many years out now for you? What was your last year?
2012 was my last year. So what, 13, 14?
So this will be 9.
Yeah, shit. It'd be
Isn't 9. That crazy?
Hold on. When was your last year?
14. So this will be my 7th year out.
And it really seems like it just was like a year ago, though, right?
It's crazy. It's like, seriously, it feels like 2 years ago, tops.
It really does.
Yeah.
Really
and I look does. Back and now it's getting to the point where it's like I've almost been out as long as I've been in or was in. You know it? I mean, you've got.
Oh, you're right, though.
So you've got 6 years left. I've got, because you played 15.
Yep.
I did 11 and I've been out. This will be 7. So, man, creeping. We're getting old, dude.
I know it, bro. Hey, how was that trip, though, with the family to Hawaii?
Oh, so we've been all over the place. We've been Florida. I haven't been to Hawaii in a little bit, but Florida. We were just in Tennessee. There's a super cool, like, farm up there. It's called Blackberry Farm.
Yeah.
So just no Wi-Fi. Hardly any cell reception, but like some of the best food ever. And they have archery. You can shoot trap. You can go hunting. You can fly fish. You can do all the things. So up in the Smoky Mountains, which is real cool, just outside of Knoxville. Yeah. Then we're just in Cincinnati. You've been everywhere. What's summer been like for you?
See, I'm just now really starting back to travel. I went to, where did I go? I went to.
You were in Cabo.
Yep, I was in Cabo. I went there a few months ago. That was really the first big place I've been this entire year.
Since COVID.
Yeah, since COVID.
Yeah.
Because I got to move around, dog. Like, yeah. Me being stagnant, like my daughter now, she's in college. She went to Auburn. So it's like, shit, man, what the fuck am I going to sit around for? You know what I mean? And that COVID, it's fucked me up just because I already knew, like, God damn, like I can't sit still.
Yeah. You've got to be a rambunctious boy, right? I mean, having all the energy, playing as long as you did, and still getting after it. And that's the cool thing for me is seeing you still getting after it and still striving and still doing. You got your MBA, you got the podcast going, which is huge. It's blown up. And I mean, you got photography, you've got like so many things going on in your life. What pushes you? What's behind it?
Bro, you know, it's all about the legacy. And what really brought it into fruition to me was my daughter came home from college. And I remember when she was in the house in high school, like, we don't have a 9-to-5, as you already know. Right. But I made it a point. I'm an early morning riser anyway, but I made it a point to get up and just, I wanted her to see me going through the grind just so that she knows, like, you ain't, like, I don't even want you remotely thinking that a dude is going to take care of you. I want her to be able to provide for herself and learn the work ethic from seeing the work ethic.
Yep.
I'm a firm believer. You can't be what you don't see. And so I want to be everything from a sight, from a visual standpoint to her, to where she doesn't have to worry about, it's nice that if you can find somebody that you're equally yoked with or compatible with, but in the event that it doesn't happen, it doesn't mean that you're doomed for life. I want to make sure you're set up to where you're able to do some of the things that you want to do and chase your dream. So that's why I do what I do, man. It's all about the legacy play. What can I leave behind for my family after the fact for years to come, to where they're not the first generation of entrepreneurs? They have some type of insight. They have relationships to where they can call upon people to be able to ask for a favor and be able to give a favor to as well.
I love that. And I think it's so powerful that you can't be what you don't see. I 100% agree with that, because as I was coming into retirement, that was my thought process. Is I've got two young boys that are 7 and 9 now, and you can't talk about it to them. You can't tell them how hard I worked to be an NFL player. You can't tell them what the grind was like in season, because they weren't there. They don't know. My oldest was 3 when I got out. My youngest was 1. They didn't know anything that was going on. They didn't even really get to take in the games. I mean, they went to some of them, but the 1-year-old, he didn't know anything. Right. And so for me to sit back and just collect mailbox money and to go, yeah, you just work hard and you'll be in the NFL, like, or you'll get to have success, while I'm just sitting at home getting fat and lazy, like, that to me would have been such a disservice to them. So I love how you said it's the legacy, but it's the lessons, right? It's what you're teaching the kids, because if you can talk about it all you want to, but if you're not living it and you're not showing it, there's no way they're going to absorb it.
Yeah. They're not going to be able to retain it. You know, I think, you know, we pride ourselves on showing strength or being able to tap into that inner self or that inner source for strength. But I think it's also important, what I've learned is to embrace the defeat as well, because if you don't, then there's no way for you to be able to say, I know what the strength side feels like, or I know that I can resort back to something to make me realize, you know what, as bad as I think it is, somebody is out here doing that much better or that much worse. So let me tap into something that I know that I've seen, tapping to a focus that I've done before in order to get me out of this rut, man. So, bro, I totally get it. Totally get it.
Embrace the defeat. And this one, tap into something that you felt before, right? That fire. Because, and I really believe this, it's almost impossible to teach the fire from inside. Like, you're born with it. You can't give somebody care. You can't give somebody give a shit. You can't, I can't care more for your success than you care for. You either got that fire or you don't have that fire. But you're talking about now that you transition out, it's like, how do I get competitive again? How do I go back and compete? How can I pull that? I used to describe it like a little monster living inside of you. It's like, I let that little monster out on the field and just go wreak havoc out there. Just go, let's go get crazy, right? Like, go have fun, get your beans out, and then come back in and I'll put you back in your cage when it's time for me to go back onto the streets and be a regular human again. But when we're out on that field, let's get crazy and compete like all dog, right? And so now it's like, how do we compete outside? And that's, I think you're talking about tapping back into that, because everyone's got that in them. They just forget sometimes that you can open that up whenever you want to. You just got to pull it out.
Bruh, you said a mouthful. And we have to tap into something that, you know, we feel like we're competing in. And give you a prime example, good story. So I remember in 2015, 16, a few of my friends, my co-host, Tutan Reyes, also Carlos Simmons, another NFL legend, they talked about going back to school to get their MBAs. And I was like, man, I left early as a junior now, Nick. So I was like, man, ain't no way in the hell I'm going back. What I'm going back to school for? Nothing. I'm not going. So, dog, 6 months into the process, they continuing to still talk about going back to get their MBAs. And so I was like, all right, Carlos already think he knows everything. Tutan already thinks he's the smartest in the room. So ain't no way I can't battle with him if I don't go back. So what I did was I said, all right, I'm going to go back and get my undergrad degree. As soon as I got that, by that time, they were already getting ready to get signed up for the MBA program. So I went ahead and signed up for the MBA program. And when I did that, bro, that, you know, you talk about the competition, it brought me back into a room to where, you know, other players were in there, former players. You had some people who were not players in the NFL, but it was that level of competition that gets us up every morning to curb that appetite, because that's what we do. We compete. And it's not so much, I mean, ideally we want to win, but when you've been programmed at a young age to compete and always want to see how you stack up against the competition, that's exactly what I needed. Now, lo and behold, 5 years later, 6 years later, I now sit with my undergrad degree from Auburn and also a MBA from the University of Miami. So to your point, that's what competition does for you.
Has it been valuable for you, the MBA?
It has, bro. And I'll tell you this, it was, I will probably say, the most eye-opening thing since I've been retired, because this is one of the things that we don't realize as players while we're active. Most guys, we want to get out of the game, we finish the game, and then we want to show, oh, we can do whatever we want to because we got the money, or we can go into this business because I'm Taquillo Spikes. Pump the brakes, young Jedi. You got to pump the brakes. And what it showed me, bro, was that it showed me several things. One, the first thing it showed me was, it's okay to acknowledge what you've done, what you've accomplished with what you've done. Number two, it's okay to embrace not only that, but embrace the acumen, the business acumen that you've learned, whether or not you were aware of it or not, that you learned from the National Football League. I remember seeing this quote. This was like from 2010, 2008 to 2012. The NFL had a 600% increase and gross revenue. And it's, you know, and for me, it was like, all right, so when I get out of the game, I saw a problem. Why so many guys want to get out and show that they can be a subject matter expert in something else? Which is fine if that's what you want to do. I think what the problem I saw was we were so quick because of the competitive nature to prove that we can do the same thing or accomplish the same level in the game that in another field. And we didn't want to have any correlation, any relevancy to the game. And I was like, we're wrong for that. One, if you look at the demographics, if you look at the numbers, 2008 to 2012, they had over a 600% increase. So what it really told me and just slowed me down was like, look, man, embrace the fact that you were a part of the best, one of the best businesses, not in the nation, but in the world. And if you understand what you're doing internally from the football aspect, whether or not if it's from a C-suite level position, GMs, or in the front office, whether or not if you're coaching directly, whether or not if you're part of the front office, you're working with the player personnel, whether or not if you're creating programs so guys can be able to transition into the next level, it doesn't matter, because if you were a part of a 600% increase, listen, all the money doesn't have to go to you, but I know I'm entitled to some of that money because I help build the brand. And that's what my MBA did for me. And that's the reason why I created Behind the Mask.
Did you think about getting back into the game? I mean, you spent 15 years in, and I know that's one of the things, and Jarrett Johnson and I talk about this a lot, is like, you know, part of it, when we get out, right, every single year at about January, February, playoff time, when you're watching guys celebrate in the locker room, Super Bowl time, when you're watching that whole thing go around, there's just such a natural part of me that wants to get back in it, right? Like almost, yeah. And this is a weird way of putting it, but like Shawshank Redemption, I want to go back in because that's the world that I know, right? And that's the world that I love. And it's like go back into prison a little bit. Did you ever go through that where you thought, I want to get back in, I want to coach, I want to be a GM, I want to be in the front office, I want to be involved directly with it?
Yeah, I've always known I never wanted to be a part of I didn't want to be a part of coaching. I would, and I love being able to help out younger players and being able to help the foundation of what they really want to become. But to be honest with you, when I first played the game, you played for over double digit years as well as I did, Nick, it boiled down to, you know, I gave the game everything I had, bro. And you saw that by playing with each other my last 2 years. And I just didn't have any more to give, because I know if I commit to anything, this is the one common factor about me, or the denominator. I'm going to be all in. I'm going to be there every day. I'm going to put in overtime. And it's not labeled as overtime. That's just who I am. Never wanted to do that, bro. You know, one of the things that I'm proud of is being able to work along with the National Football League, football operations, in particular with helping guys being able to transition. And so I have calls with them all the time and just talking about the problems that I see, you know, how can I fill the gap of need? And I don't mind doing that, because that's something that I do typically anyway for all of the guys.
So this, the entrepreneurial side kind of started with the book, right? If I have it correct, you get out and then you're doing photography. And then you have this, it's a gorgeous book too, Behind the Mask. And then the book kind of turned into public speaking.
Yep.
And then you'd have the podcast that comes after that, and the NBA comes. And tell me about the book. What was that process like?
Oh, that process was, it was unbelievable. It was dope, because to give you the story of the concept of how it came along. Now, going back to when I took the MBA class, the first class that we had to take was creative writing and thinking. And mind you, I haven't been in school, like school since like 98. And so when we took the class, the first thing that the professor told us to do was, all right, I want you to write about something. It can be something about what you're doing or what you want to do. and expand on what should we expect from this, you know, whatever goal or whatever thing you decide to write on, and also talk about what makes you passionate about it. And so during this time, I was in the pre-production stages of creating Behind the Mask, Volume 1 for Linebackers. And so I went on to tell this story about, I'm going to go out and capture all of the, some of the greatest players or greatest linebackers from every one guy out of every decade and share their story of how did they become great, what made them an outlier. And so when I did that, I had an intro, I had the body of it, I had the conclusion that kind of summed everything up. And all of this I wrote from my 10th grade English literature teacher. And from that format that I remember, I was like, all right, I think I can write. And so I wrote it. And so 2 days later, right, professor comes back into class and say, look, guys, this is what I want. I saw some of the papers, but this is what I want. Take a look at this one. Now he puts my paper up on the screen and I'm thinking, oh shit. Oh. So I'm like, he was like, I'm not going to say this person's name, but if they want to say something, they feel free. And I'm like, I'm not saying nothing because I didn't know where he was going.
Yeah.
So he used my paper as a tutorial to say, this is how I want it set up, guys. Look how he set you up in the intro. Look at the body. He has three main talking points for the body of the message. And then the conclusion is really a synopsis of everything, what he talked about. So when I ask you to do this again next week, just remember this format. So me, I'm thinking I'm in a shell. So now I'm coming up with the big chest. Like, yeah, that's my paper, Jay. That's my paper, dog. But nah, man, but that's how it all came into fruition when we look at Behind the Mask. And I remember this is the most important thing that he told me before I walked out of class. He said to Keo, are you going to write your book? And I was like, nah, I'm not going to write it because I'd rather get somebody who does it. He was like, don't you dare do that. Don't come back in this classroom and you ever say that again. He said, you're good enough to write the book. You write it and you give it to that person to clean you up from an edit, grammar, punctuation standpoint. And I was like, okay, but that gave me so much confidence, Nick, like so much. And that was the birth of the Behind the Mask book, which now has turned into the Behind the Mask podcast.
Who were the guys that you followed in the book? Who'd you get whose stories did you get and what made them unique?
I'll tell you, the first guy who I shot and wrote his story was Willie Lanier. He was the first black linebacker inducted into the Hall of Fame, played for the Kansas City Chiefs. His story was different because you think as kids, like, man, that's what I want to aspire to be. Willie Lanier talked about, he was like, I wasn't even motivated by the game from a love standpoint. And I challenged him. I didn't say, no. I said, how can you make it to the Hall and you say you don't love the game? He was like, Takeo, it was a way for me to really get into what I truly love. And I said, what do you love? He said, I love business. And I told him, I said, how can you love business before you love the game? He was like, it started for me when I was 8 years old. My father came home and brought home a business journal magazine. And I opened the magazine and I started to read and I saw this allowed me to travel places without even getting on a plane. It allowed me to exercise my mind to see, like, what is it about business that allowed these people to create this magazine? And so that merely motivated him to become Willie Lanier, the first black linebacker inducted into the Hall of Fame, win the first title with the Kansas City Chiefs AFL championship. And I was like, wow, I couldn't believe it. And so from that, I was like, man, let me go and see what Mike Singletary has to say about his story of what motivated him. Let me see what Harry Carson has to say. Let me see what Kevin Green, God rest his soul.
Yeah.
You know, so when I look at all of the guys that I highlighted, beautiful stories, talk about trials and tribulations, whether or not if they grew up, I remember Harry Carson talking about He grew up in South Carolina, went to South Carolina State, HBCU. And he talked about, I remember coming together in high school when schools were integrated. And I was like, man, how was that? Like, I know the white kids was looking at you a certain way and the black kids was looking at the white kids a certain way. But that's where he first earned the nickname as the captain, because it wasn't so much because of bringing guys together on the football field. He actually brought white and black kids together to where they can see a common ground while they were actually playing. All of this inside of the book, man. So I get chill bumps even talking about it again, Nick.
That is awesome. And that is, speaking of bringing different cultures together, different races together, different religions together, different sexual preference together. It doesn't matter, right? It's like you're on a team. You've got a common goal. Everything else can fuck off, right? Like there's nothing more important than beating the team in front of you. No. And that to me is the beauty of sports, where it, even in the fan, with the fans coming to the stadium to support their team, you put everything aside, politics, race, religion, sex, all of it doesn't matter. Yep. That's the goal. And that's the beauty of sports.
That's the beauty of it. Nick, bro, I'll tell you this. I know three things that bring people together in life. Music, food, and the last thing is sport. People don't care where you're from, what demographic, what political party you're in. Those three things bring people together. And that's the reason why you see a lot of people outside of the game. They have a problem with athletes speaking up about social issues. Like, we can't talk about it. Well, listen, I probably would consider not talking about it if you give me exempt-free tax status, or if you give me status to where, like, I'm really benefiting. Maybe I'll consider it. Doubt it, but maybe. But you know what I mean? But, like, that's the beautiful thing, bro. It's like, I give you a good example. I remember playing against you and just seeing you on film. And I used to be like, this dude is the biggest prick of all time. I hate this guy. But when we became teammates and I got a chance to see how you work, never told you this, see how you work, see how you take care of the offensive line, see how your relationship is with Phillip, see how you interact with everybody. I was like, number one guy I hated to play against, but number one guy who I would love to have as my teammate. And I think it's a testimony to everything what we're talking about today, bro. Everything.
So what I remember about you, the first time we played was in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. And we kept trying to run with LT. We kept trying to run a weak side power away from the tight end. And my job was, we called it a slice. I was supposed to come to the three technique, chip the three technique and get up to you. And I couldn't. You just read it too fast. It was just over the top so quick. I was like, I come to the sidelines and Cam Cameron every time. I'm like, why can't we get to 51? It's like, you're asking me to block two guys. I can't get to him. He's reading it too quick. So we made this little adjustment. And then I ended up getting on. It was the backside of you and just running you. Thankfully, they didn't call me for a block in the back or anything, but just trying to run you by the hole. And then LT finally got one. But I was like, that sucker, I couldn't block you to save my life. What happened here? There we are. I couldn't get to you to save my life. And then I talked to Phillip a couple months ago, and I didn't realize this, that after that game that we played in Buffalo,
yeah,
that you, him, and Lo Neal were sharing beers in the locker room, right outside the press conference room. Phil loved you. We all did. We all just thought it was a real, real blessing to get a play with you. My only regret from that time is that you didn't come a little bit earlier.
Yeah, man.
You weren't there in like 2007 to 2009.
Man, listen. I envied y'all. I envy all of you guys, man. Like, I'll shoot Sean Phillips a text, and I never played with Lights Out, Sean Merriman. But the run that you guys had was very impressive. Like, very impressive, bro. And even going back to when Phillip tore his ACL, and still came back to finish the season. And I just think, bro, it's like, it's from my time getting signed with San Diego, I was like, Lord, please let it happen. Now, I've only played with one good quarterback, and that was Drew Bledsoe. And Drew was on his back nine. And I was like, if it's ever going to happen, it got to happen in San Diego. It got to. It didn't happen, but at the end of the day, bro, like the relationships that I made, being able to come on your podcast and we able to chop it up, not only about football, but life, like to me, that's priceless.
You know, you didn't hear me introduce you, but I introduce you as my former teammate and one of the best leaders of men that I've ever been around. Respect. Where'd you learn how to be a leader? Where's that come from?
Bro, it was, brother, another good one. When I was in Cincinnati, started my career in Cincinnati, 98 to 2002. I remember going through the first season, we went 6-10. Next season, we went 2-14. I remember after the third game, Bruce Kozlik quitting, didn't come in. You know that Wednesday meeting when we get ready to start our week?
Oh, yeah.
And we were like, where's the head coach? And we were making jokes saying like, all right, 5 minutes, he's not here, so we can leave like we're in college. And Dick LeBeau walks in and say, hey, guys, I'm coming to you to tell you news that your head coach, Bruce Kozlik, is resigning, and I'll be the new head coach. And so it goes back to the question, like, what was the question again? You said,
when did you learn to be a leader? When did you, I guess, step up and kind of own that leadership role? Because the minute you showed up in San Diego, there was no doubt you were going to be a captain and you were going to lead us. And there was not a single question and everybody knew the deal.
Yeah, you know what it was, bro? It was like going through tough times like that. And we had no structure at all in Cincinnati. And I don't say this to be completely honest, shit on Cincinnati, but I say it to put, you know, to paint a, put some context around it. Man, when I got there, I was one of the guys, the first round pick, I was going to get them breakfast in the mornings. Like, we didn't even have breakfast as a team.
Wow. So no cafeteria, none of that.
No, you didn't have none of that. You eat in your locker. Like, you didn't have none of that. And so, for my thing is, I'll acknowledge this, does that has anything to do with winning games per se? Directly, no. Indirectly, yes. But my point is this. I went through so much 2-14 season, 4-12 season, damn 7-9 season. I started reading books to hone in on my craft of just leadership to make sure I can't get stale in my approach. I got to always keep it fresh. I remember reading this book, Sun Tzu, The Art of a Warrior.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, man. And so, like, and it really just gave different perspectives of, like, not how you can motivate people, but just letting people know it's okay to be vulnerable. But while you're being vulnerable, you have to always remind them, I am in charge and you're leading by your actions and everything that you speak. And so a lot of it is just an accumulation of trial and error and then just going through filling the gap of need of what I saw for that team.
So you played 15 years and this, I don't know if this is a record or not, but you didn't get to play in a playoff game, which I think is like one of the great tragedies in the NFL, in NFL history. It's like a guy that played at your level for as long as you played, 219 games and not one playoff game. How'd you keep the faith? And there was never a moment at practice, at walkthrough, in meetings, on the plane where your spirit was ever broken. And I can imagine after going through even five of those years that you could have your spirit broken and you could just give up faith that it was ever going to happen for you and slow down and start gearing down. But not once that I, at least that I ever saw. I mean, maybe in the quiet spots, in the dark moments at home that we all kind of have, that you may have that, but then you showed up the next day. How'd you keep the faith?
It was not just one thing. And it's a great question, Nick. A lot of people don't, they know the fact that maybe I never made it to the playoffs with, you know, such a decorated career.
Mm-hmm.
But the, you know, one thing that stands out to mind was I work out with a lot of other pros, same way that we all do. Hines Ward, Wayne Gandy. I remember working out with, you know, Carlos Emmons, Jamal Lewis, like plenty of guys, Shannon Sharp. Shit, I used to work out with Ray Lewis when I first came into the league. But my point is this, I remember after we get through working out, and I remember Hines Ward, we loved to joke. He played in Pittsburgh. I was in Cincinnati. We saw him 2 times a year. And that was one of the hardest games for them to be able to win against Cincinnati, because we would split with them at the minimum. We're going to split. So I remember he was just killing me, like, Spike Jones, what's up? Oh, Cincinnati ain't going to be good. And so for me internally, I felt like, all right, keep feeding the gas, keep feeding the fuel to the fire, because I'm going to knock you out. But at the end of the conversation, when we were done, he was like, hey, all right, I'm going to be real now. Like, we do feel like we can beat Cincinnati, but the one thing that we had to do, and this is going back to when Bruce Arians was the offensive coordinator, we had to make sure that we put a hat on 51, because we knew if we can take you out of the game, everything else will follow. And so for me, Nick, when you asked me that question, that gave me so much confidence. It gave me, like, bro, I felt like he put the defibrillator on me, on my nipples, and was just like, clear, boom. And you know what I mean? So, like, I knew you acknowledged the fact that you saw something, and I would like to think it was greatness. That's what I was chasing every day when I woke up and go to practice and play games. But you saw something, and if you acknowledged it, I was going to continue to feed into it. And that's what kept me going, because I just felt like, can't nothing be shitty for the entire lifetime? It just can't. And even though I didn't make it, do I still consider that shitty? No, I do not, because I've accomplished a lot. To be able to be one of only 5 to 6 linebackers to ever play in starting over 200 plus games, to be named captain 13 out of the 15 seasons, and you talked about it, playing in my NFL career, and I played on 5 different teams. Like, we all know one thing about the locker room. You can't come in there and politic. You just can't do it and get a title. Like, you just, it ain't possible. They'll be like, man, this my, he bullshit. Like, get him up out of here.
Everyone knows.
Yeah, everybody knows. The respect factor, man, I think I just always believed, like, my faith is so big to me, I always believed that it was going to get better. I truly believed that. And now, looking back at it, be completely honest with you, I look back at my days in Cincinnati and I say, could it been better? It could have, but there's no way it could have been better with the management being in shambles the way that it was. In Cincinnati, when we got rid of Drew Bledsoe, there was no way for us to win. JP lost one. He was the next up and coming. Philly, I looked at my time in Philly. 1 year. That was the year after Donovan tore his ACL. And so Donovan wasn't the true Donovan until maybe like week 8, week 9. And we went on a run, but it was too late to make the playoffs. My time in San Francisco, I look at that time and I look at the effect that I had on a young Patrick Willis in his second year, and being able to allow him to be as great as he was going to be that anyway, but it was adding structure and everything into his game and his lifestyle that allowed him to be able to become the man that he was. So, you know, it's all valuable, and I don't regret anything, because if I did, then I don't think I could proceed as I am or as the businessman I am now today.
I think that's where so many people.
Hold that quick. I need to plug this up right quick. Hold on.
Do it.
Yeah. All right, we good.
I think that's where so many people mess up, is that they quit too soon, that they lose faith that they're going to be rewarded for all of this work that they're doing. And they just give up and they say, it's never going to be worth it. It's never going to work out for me. The gods aren't in my favor, whatever the case may be. And that's, I think you brought up a great point about, and fans don't really know this because they know there's a salary cap. They know there's a minimum cash spend. All teams aren't created equally.
Yep.
And you really got to get lucky and land at the right organization who invest. And you're, as a player, while you're going through it, you're unwilling to acknowledge that. You're unwilling to say that, hey, we had some bootleg food. We'd never had masseuses or chiropractors or stayed in nice hotels. And we're always 45 minutes away from heaven. You know, there's all of these little things that add up to be big things, right? They would always tell you as a player, the way you do one thing is the way you do everything. But yeah, as an organization, they don't necessarily hold themselves accountable to that exact same standard, right? So You're unwilling or unable to recognize that as a player. But then when you get out and you look back, you go, no shit, we didn't win a championship. Or, no shit, I didn't go to the playoffs. Like, how could we have? But while you're going through it, of course, you have to just put your blinders on, put your head down, get to work, and make the most of what you got.
Yeah. And that's what I did. And was it hard? Absolutely. It was hard. I think what made it easier in my earlier years is I'm pretty sure we've heard of the saying, you don't know what you don't know. Like, when somebody doesn't know what they don't know, it can make them very dangerous. And then it can also, you know, you can make a buffoonery out of it as well. And for me, when I didn't know what I didn't know, knowing how bad we were, and knowing from a management standpoint that we were not aligning ourselves to be in a position to say, you know what, I'm gonna put the players in the best position to be able to win. By me not knowing that, I was fearless. And my hope level, my belief was so high that nobody could have told me anything different, because I felt like, why not us and why not now? Yeah. That was my belief, bro. That was it.
And then
went 2-14.
And then you get in the CBA negotiations in 2010, 2011, and you find out that the reason we put the minimum cash spend in is because of Cincinnati. Dude's spending like 45% of the salary cap. It's like, well, no wonder we're not winning. We're not spending any money. But you don't know that.
Bro, I'm looking at the record and I'm like, okay, they're waiting on Jerry Jones and Snyder up in D.C. to be able to implement some things so they can eat good off the sharing agreement, you know? So,
yeah.
Hey, now you know. Good thing I didn't find out earlier, because you probably wouldn't have me on your podcast.
Oh, man. Well, I just think if you would have got the chance to play on some winning teams, there's no doubt in my mind you would have been a Pro Football Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
There's no doubt. Do you think about that?
I do, bro. I do. And I had recently on my podcast, Behind the Mask, who did I just have?
Fred Taylor.
Fred Taylor. Yep. I had Fred Taylor on, and we were talking about that. And he too, for a lot of it, went through some of the same things that I went through, playing in a small media market, not winning a lot of games and not having the opportunity to go to the big playoff games, mm-hmm. and showing like, oh my God, this is what he can do. But he still produced. And I think that definitely has something to do with it. But I still believe when I look at my numbers, and if you compare it from any era or any linebackers, I still do think I have a place in Canton.
Yeah.
Do I think it's going to be, I've been on the ballot now for 2 years. Do I think it's going to be soon? I don't think so. I don't know. But when I go around and I meet voters who I didn't know who had a vote in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, you know, they acknowledge the fact, I really didn't know what you went through, Takiyo. But after hearing Jeff Hobson, which is the writer who is also a voter from the Cincinnati Bengals, talk about why this guy should at a minimum be on the ballot and why he should be in the hall, they come back and acknowledge that to me. And so for me, it's really just showing what I was able to accomplish with less.
Yeah.
We talk about less is more. Look at what I was able to accomplish in a short time period, which seems long, but to continue to do it year in, year out, put up the numbers. And so I never back away from that. I don't care if I'm talking to damn Lawrence Taylor. I'll tell you, like, you show me somebody else who went through what I went through and let's compare numbers. It won't even compare.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's a political thing, as you already know. And I feel like my impact can always be measured by your teammates who you talk to and people, your peers who you played against. And that's what I'm going to rely on. That's exactly what I'm going to rely on.
Who is your favorite linebacker to watch?
I would probably say, I mean, active or like overall?
Any.
Now, I'll tell you this. Like a lot of the guys in my book, I really like enjoyed watching them play.
You respect them. Yeah.
Ricky Jackson. Like, you know they had the Dome Patrol with him, Pat Swilling, and Sam Mills. But listen, Ricky Jackson was a damn beast. I love watching Mike Singletary play, even though people remember him from his eyes. But I remember the impact that he had by gathering everybody together up under Buddy Ryan's 46 defense. I tell you another guy who I really enjoyed just going back to watch highlights of is, he played with the Kansas City Chiefs along with Willie Lanier, and I got him in the book, and he goes by the name of Bobby Bell. Bobby Bell was one of the first linebackers. A lot of people don't know this just simply because he didn't come up in the era to where people can watch games, is he played outside and inside. And for him being 6'4", 6'5", having that versatility, I'm not saying he was LT, but he was the first going back to the 60s and 70s to where you see a linebacker who could be versatile and be able to move inside and outside. Chuck Bednarik, but like, modern day, let me get to modern day. Modern day, some of the guys who I really enjoyed like watching, Patrick Willis when I showed up.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is the thing now.
You guys were nasty.
You don't realize how good guys on the West Coast are. And this is for guys who are playing.
That's true. Because
you play at 1 o'clock, you're done at 4. Guess who comes on at the 4 o'clock game? San Diego, San Francisco, Seattle. And so when you see those teams, you don't really get a chance to see like what they're doing.
That's right.
But it really was a treat. It was an honor to really play beside him, because I remember we came to San Diego. Pete, this, I know you remember this. Both of us broke our hands.
I was going to bring that up. You guys both were walking around with those giant clubs on, and both of you were just hulks in the middle. And I thought, good Lord, who's going to block these two?
Yeah, man, but we had the Q-tips on our hands in the fucking hand. But and you know, obviously Ray Lewis, I think he was always the bar. He was he was that guy that everybody chased and wanted to be like, if my name is mentioned alongside with his, I'm in good company.
Yeah, and it is, and it should be. Yeah. One quick story that I want to bring up. I think we're in either Jacksonville or Tampa. I know we're in Florida, and we're in the locker room, and I'm pretty sure it was Jacksonville. And you're giving the pregame speech like you always did, getting us going, and you're into it, right? You're feeling it, and we're all feeling it. We're just kind of vibing. And the head official walks in and he goes, "Hey, San Diego, we got to get you out on the field or we're going to start the game without you." And Phillip's standing right by him and he's like, "Y'all ain't going to play the game without us." He's like, "Hold on a minute. The man's talking." We just kept going. And I remember I'm always a guy that like, I've changed now since I'm not in and I'm okay being late places. But I remember when he came in, I was like, "Oh God, they're going to start the game without us." And Phil's like, "Ain't nobody starting this thing without us. You can't, we can show on TV."
Yeah. I remember that though. I remember that because I was thinking, "Man, get the fuck out of here, man. You're starting the game, but what you going to do? Call the league office and say they're not coming out to play?"
Right. Yeah, that is not happening. When you were going, when you were doing that, when you were speaking in front of us, did you always come to the game with something in mind, or did you just freestyle and let it go?
No, I think a lot of it was I never really sat back and I really thought like, okay, what am I going to talk about? It was a couple of times throughout the season to where I remember like, if I didn't feel it, I wasn't going to say anything.
Yeah.
Because I know that's the fastest way to be discredited as a leader. That's the fastest way. You don't want to get up and just talk just to talk, or you don't want to meet just to meet. But for me, it was more so organic, and it was something that I truly was feeling that I knew if we addressed it on that day, like we had more than a 95% chance of winning. And that's what kind of really led me that, you know, I don't like the pre-scripted guys. Like,
yeah,
this ain't Hollywood. Like, I don't mind being in Hollywood, but this ain't no Hollywood, though.
When you talk to businesses and stuff, and I'm sure you talk on leadership, what do you tell them?
I think, you know, the big thing for me was when you talk on leadership, man, it's more so for, like, it's four things that you have to bring to the table. And really just let that be known as far as what you want to do. And I remember the four things that really came off to me when I talked to business people. And it's really like, it's not just football. It's just, I think it's essential things that leaders must have in order to communicate with the people. And like, for me, one of them was, you gotta have command of the room. Like, it's important. What does that mean? It means like, you gotta have a plan on what to expect from everybody and give them their expectation. I think the number two thing is you gotta have command of the message. And when you have command of the message, I think a most beautiful way to explain it is it's the art of storytelling. With my message, how can I put this in a story to make you be able to relate to it? The third thing is understand that it's a command of the process. And when you have the command of the process, that means you in particular have to do things that are hard. You have to have hard conversations. You have to be honest. You gotta be able to make tough decisions even though it's not from the mind or the eyesight of the fan favorite. And I think the last thing is have command of self. And when you have command of self, you can be able to understand and know your limitations and know where your peaks are. And I think the main thing with command of self is being able to accept it's okay to be wrong and acknowledge when you're wrong. But the big thing for me is, a smart man learns from his own mistakes, but a wise man learns from other men's mistakes. And so by having command of self, having enough vulnerability to understand and to acknowledge, this is where I'm weak, but I know where I can fill that gap of need by bringing in other people to fill that for me. And so, and I think when, if you take that from a business standpoint and you implement it into anything that you do, whether or not if it's a coaching staff, whether or not if it's C-suite level positions, whether or not if it's a marketing team where you're trying to create a message, or even PR to make a message that may seem as bland to us or to a people who are presented, but we can take that, package it up, and be able to now put amplifiers behind it, it's going to have that much more credibility.
Command. I love that. I love that message. All right. I know you're behind the mask is rolling. It's going really well. You have some unreal guests. You guys have great conversations, really strong analysis. What other projects you got going? Because I know you're, once you get one thing going and it's up and kind of on autopilot, I know you got more irons in the fire.
This is the big one. And I'm glad you asked me that, because I've now turned Behind the Mask into Behind the Mask Media Productions.
Awesome.
And ideally, I would love to be able to, you know, not only produce and help create content for other athletes who want to get into this sector, but now we're going into the art of storytelling. And with that, that's documentaries. And for us, and what we're doing over here with Behind the Mask is finding the stories, not just football stories, but relevant stories for people who are in the sporting field. And we're going to unleash and talk about the unknown stories that we never even heard about before. And so I would say, for everybody who's looking for what's next for Taquio, is the documentaries are coming. And is it going to be like a 30 for 30? It's going to be our version of a 30 for 30. Behind the mask, baby. Become vulnerable in small spaces.
I love that. And you do such a wonderful job, and you're easy to follow, right? Like I said, you're such a natural leader, charismatic. You command the room. You command the message. You command yourself. You're unreal, man. I love you. As a teammate, I love you. I appreciate your time, and I'll keep following you, because you always be a captain to me.
I appreciate that, fam. I really do. And Nick, it goes without saying with us, man, but I appreciate not only your service to the game, but since you've been out of the game, looking at your podcast and seeing the things that you talk about, the lifestyle, why you did certain things to change up your eating habits, like everything that you've done, bro, that contribution to the game is priceless. It's evergreen. And one thing that you didn't know, since I came on your podcast, now you have to come on mine.
But nice.
And we got to be able to chop this thing up. So be ready to come on mine, man, because I appreciate what you do, and you bring another level and depth of not just perception, but wise and skill. And so I definitely want to talk about that.
Awesome. Oh, I forgot to ask you. Jarrett Johnson told me to put you on the spot on the podcast. December 7th through 12th, we're taking a trip to Tucson, Arizona, and we're going to be biking like 50 to 60 miles a day. We're staying at this house. It's got a pool, a hot tub, food's all taken care of. We want to know if you'll join us, and you can bring a guest. You can do the BTM podcast from the house.
Listen, that's an offer that I can't turn down. I'm going to say yes now, because I don't know the days of the date.
Good. Just say yes.
I was supposed to be with y'all with the veterans too now for Memorial Day.
That's right.
But I had to get my daughter from college, and we had to get all of that situated. That's awesome. The reason why I didn't come. But count me in.
We'll pencil you in.
Yeah, pencil me in.
Pencil you and a guest in.
Yeah, that'll work.
Awesome. Taquio, thank you, brother.
Hey, man, I appreciate it. Much respect, Nick. Love you,
man. It's been awesome. Yeah, we'll be in touch soon.
Right on.
All right, buddy. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.